Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 180. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Graham Thickens, remote from Social Media Breakfast.
Hello from downtown Minneapolis.
And Tim Elliott from Lakeville.
We're singing the blues down here.
And Phil Wilson, who's also remote at SMB.
Hello, hello. Yes, from the 514 studios in the Warehouse District.
You know, you can't pretend anymore about radio after that last podcast. Yeah, well, where we...
It's my boss, Jock Puking Days.
Oh, man. That is so great. Anyway, so why don't you guys let us know what happened at SMB, Graham and Phil?
Okay, well, listen, we were at SMB today. Lee Oden was speaking on... topics related to his book, Optimize, and we're talking about SEO and social media and content and bringing them all together and optimizing them. We'll have Leon in just a minute here. So it was a great talk. What did you think, Graham?
Well, I liked it, and it was about a lot more than SEO, you know, because as Lee said so eloquently, engagement is a lot more than SEO these days, and optimizing in particular is a lot more than SEO. And he had a great presentation. It was different and even better, I thought, than the one we saw at his book launch event. When was that? 3-4 weeks ago at ARIA. So he gets better every time he talks.
That's good. Means he's practicing,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, I think he's had a lot of practice. He's probably doing these book talks a lot all over the place.
One thing I'm curious about, have you guys noticed an increase in the level of knowledge and sophistication amongst the audience members? I mean, are the questions better, especially if someone like Lee?
Oh, yeah, there's some excellent questions, and Phil had some really good ones, and I was in the back and couldn't hear it all, but Phil needs to talk about it. He was right down in, like, row one or two, right in his face, you know?
Was Lee rolling his eyes?
I literally couldn't hear Phil. I was in the back of the room, and you're going to have to talk about what you and Lee were going at it about up there.
Okay. Well, listen. We'll wait for Lee to pop back, and we'll kind of continue that conversation. Why don't we cover some of the other things, and then we can just bring on Lee as a guest in a little bit, and we'll chat a little bit about that. Is that okay with you guys?
Yeah, that works.
Sure.
Graham, why don't you talk about Explore Minneapolis and what happened?
Oh,
there?
Yeah. Well, actually, they called it Explore Minnesota, but Jason Falls Social Media Explorer event was held last week at, where the heck was it? I can't even remember where we were now. Oh, yeah, the Doubletree Park Place in St. Louis Park. That was a tremendous event. It was one of five cities that Jason was taking this event around to. I think they did Dallas, Nashville, then Minneapolis, and they're doing Orange County and somewhere else in the coming month. That thing drew about 250 people. I couldn't believe the showing. And lots of great out-of-town speakers. Jay Baer and, who were some of the other ones? A lot of big
Tom Webster from Edison Research had a lot of great numbers.
Oh, yes.
And we had a mobile presentation from a couple of folks. So it was the Explore concept is, you know, using all of these gathering these nationally known speakers to come in and sort of be the anchor for the event, and then bring in some local speakers as well. Jennifer Kane did a presentation. Garrett Hanson was on a panel as well. So it was a good event, and a lot of good information was shared by guys that are very confident in what they speak about.
Yeah, and I remembered another good one I liked was Jeff Roars from Exact Target gave a great talk about how email is far from dead, and he took off on busting that myth really, really well. And then he went after Facebook for a marketing platform, and expose that for what it really is or isn't, which I thought was great. And then the talk that Jason Falls did at the end, kind of a fireside chat with the ad contrarian, was pretty funny. That guy, you know, Mr. Curmudgeon, he went after everything, including the term engagement, which he thinks is complete crap. And maybe we can put up a link. He's got an ebook that we were provided with that might be available publicly. And the talk Jay Baer gave on utility, YOUtility, you know, how being helpful and providing, you know, creating customers for life with useful content. Obviously, this event had the content marketing thing running all through it. And his talk, which I think he said was the first time he'd given it, was the opening keynote, and was tremendous. So, hats off to Jason Falls for coming to Minneapolis and doing a heck of a job. So we appreciate that. And we tweeted our heads off from there, Phil and I, on the Minovate Twitter account. So we had a lot of fun.
Excellent. So, Tim, do you think the whole social media thing is going to still stick?
Yeah, I think it seems like it's here to stay.
Good. This thing might have legs, you know?
It might, just a little bit.
I'm so glad.
Until the next big thing comes along.
Yeah, right.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of big things and the need to have big things happen, I got to tell you, I was a head scratcher when Best Buy appointed their new boy. Yeah, their new CEO, Hubert, is it Jolly or Jolly?
Who is the Hubert Jolly?
Jolly.
He is a native of France and still a French citizen. Did you see where he had to get like clearance from the Department of Immigration and Nationalization to get his work permit?
He can't start the job until the visa is secured.
Right? Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Start in September, so I hope they hurry up.
Yep. Well,
yeah,
but it sort of makes sense, though. I mean, they, you know, hospitality guy, you know, fresh eyes, doesn't have the retail experience, so, you know, doesn't know what he doesn't know. And there's plenty of retail brains still at Best Buy. So, you know,
well, the retail brains really haven't done the best job at it. So.
True.
Yeah,
maybe it'll work out.
Well, you know, he's got something going for him in the way of speed of turnaround at Carlson. I guess he did a pretty decent job in the first couple of years he was on hand over there, or once the 2008 financial crash hit and the travel market went to hell. He had to do some pretty damn fast footwork. Of course, a lot of that was cut. He sold Carlson Marketing, you know, got out of some businesses that they didn't need to be in, but the guy did make a mark. And, you know, is a rock star sort of CEO. The question is, will that translate to retail and to making the switch from big box to some new glorious digital strategy?
Well, does he have the time is the key thing here. I don't know if anybody could really bring them back, given the challenges they face. So... Well, we'll see, though.
Well,
maybe
bring them back to what they were. I don't know. The whole world of retail and commerce is changing. Trying to get back to what Best Buy once was is probably a pipe dream. It's, you know, what is it going to be moving forward?
Well, you know, it was interesting because I used to work for Pioneer New Media, as you guys may recall, the video disc and CD-ROM division of the Japanese Pioneer Electronics giant. And I realized the other day that almost all the products that they make, and Panasonic, a lot of the products they make, when you look at consumer electronics, how many people are going out and buying new stereo receivers and speakers? And most of the technologies that really put them on the map, you know, when CDs hit and DVDs hit and you know, so even the Japanese consumer electronics manufacturers are having a heck of a time, as we've seen with Sony's results and all of that. And that, you know, in a lot of ways is at the core of what Best Buy sells, and a big part of their problem is, you know, they're redoing the Eden Prairie store like they did the Richfield store, re-engineering the layout. And part of that is getting rid of all the movies and music, because, you know, nobody's buying the stuff at retail.
So are you saying that the USB turntable is not going to turn them around?
Well, the jury's out on that, Phil. Depends
probably
on how
not.
Many you buy. But
probably
yeah,
not.
I know we've poked around the edges of this a long time, but I added a link, and I'll put it in the show notes, to a Fast Company article, what every CEO can learn from Best Buy's branding mistakes. And I thought, ouch.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. You know, I think they did a pretty good job of branding themselves for a long time. So,
well, their big graphic in this article is how to create a shitty brand. And the Venn diagram, has shit in
that's
the center.
Cold. You know when you're down, it's just everybody just piles on, don't they? They just pile on.
Yeah.
Like, well, then again, I've taken my shots at RIM, so why not? Let's just hop on. Let's go.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the branding argument is a good one, because, you know, Best Buy isn't, or what's the term we were using? I mean, the brand doesn't really stand for what they are, you know, anymore. But, you know, I've heard discussion about branding as relates to them, and there may be some things available to them in that world going forward here, and who knows what may happen when Mr. Scholl gets in there. Assuming Mr. Schultz doesn't succeed with his buyout attempt of taking them private. I heard something interesting, that there was some talk about how the market didn't react well to Scholl. The stock went down the day after Scholl was announced, but you have to remember, it also it went down maybe more because of the news that Schultz was not getting cooperation from the board, and that maybe the investors were starting to think this guy isn't going to succeed in doing this takeover, this buyout. And so, you know, you can't necessarily assume that the stock price went down because of Scholl being announced. But anyway, we've got, looks like Phil's got Mr. Lee Oden ready to come on here. So
oh, great.
I'll let him take it from here. Is that okay, guys? I mean, I know
sure.
He needs to get going. He's got things to optimize. I know that. So,
well, say, tell him hi from Tim and I.
Of course I will.
Yeah.
Later. No, this is very high tech. We'll be going from phone to phone. So Lee, Steve Borsch, Tim Elliott, all say hi. Very much for joining us. We're talking with Lee Oden, whose new book, Optimize, is out, and he's been signing copies. We're still trying to figure out how you sign an ebook version, which is what I've got. But Lee, thanks very much for this morning's talk, first and foremost, and also for joining us today.
Thanks. It's good to be here, Phil.
So, Lee, first and foremost, Graham referenced that you and I had a little conversation or an exchange when I had asked a question, and sorry if I came off. You mentioned it in your responses, yeah, an axe to grind. Maybe it is a little bit of an axe, but we were talking about measurement and level of engagement. And I had mentioned to you my concern about this growing thing among social media folks of saying, you know, numbers like number of likes are not important and that sort of thing. And what I meant to really do was key off what you had said, that it's really not just about the likes, it's about the level of engagement. So can you talk a little bit about that as we try to look for ways to measure results in a world that can be somewhat ethereal? What have you found works best, and how does optimizing your content across multiple platforms help in that?
Well, I think the most important thing is having an understanding of what it is that you're trying to achieve, and that was part of our dialogue. Because what I'm going to measure is going to be a little bit different, maybe. You know, if I've got acquisition-focused goals, then I'm going to look at things that lead most directly to that so I can optimize against it. But if I'm looking more towards, and we have client engagements like, you know, that are pure acquisition, pure transaction, grow revenue, whatever, oriented. But then there are others that are more community building oriented, grow the network. We want to create more awareness, warm positive fuzziness about our brand at large, because they know that investment in brand is going to turn into lots of other outcomes, like things like media coverage, being able to recruit people, even unsolicited media coverage or inquiries from an inbound marketing standpoint. So I think as you understand what it is that you're trying to achieve, you've got to map the optimization efforts across content and social channels accordingly. And then to get an idea of how you're making progress, you've got to identify things like comments, retweets, engagement metrics, or whatever, to the degree that they help you understand you're on the right track, you should measure them. If they're not the kind of thing that support you achieving what you're trying to go after, then you need to measure those other things instead. And that's kind of my attitude. There's a time and place for the mix of metrics. And I'm rather than, you know, focusing too much on what somebody who's trying to sell a book has, right. I'm going to take that as food for thought, and I understand the irony of that comment, but I'm going to look at my own data, my own experience as much as possible. And that's what I'm trying to empower people to do, especially with the book Optimize.
So tell us, give us a quick little, the 30-second overview of Optimize, because I think it is all about search plus this, search plus that, and I think that's what really appeals to me. But give me the overview of Optimize from your end.
Sure. Well, you know, I got the idea for the book. I've been blogging for 8 years, right, and a lot of conference speaking, But in the course of doing consulting, started to see this holistic perspective being more effective. That's just it. And because our attitude towards marketing for ourselves is very optimization-centric, and I don't mean search optimization per se. I mean this notion of having a hypothesis about, okay, here's a customer segment that's got a need, and here's what we have to offer to meet that need. How can we communicate that as a story? How can we identify what would be the most impactful way for them to do what we want them to do? Buy, refer, whatever. And that process, the process of refining that approach, is really what developed this sort of Optimize 360 attitude that I wrote about in the book. So it's split up into three sections: planning, doing auditing, competitive research, developing your strategy and roadmap. Armed with all that data and insight, then you can go for the second section, which is really focused on implementation. So that's doing customer segmentation, persona research, editorial plan, keyword research, social topics, creation and curation of content, link building, social networking, analytics, all that is in the middle section of the book. And then you can take what you've learned there into the third section of the book, which is about how to scale. How can we turn that information into auditing our own organization to determine what's our readiness, what's our savviness, what's our competency when it comes to this integrated approach, and how can we implement processes and training to scale it across the organization?
This is very exciting stuff to me, because you know when I used to consider Leo one of the foremost thought leaders in SEO, and now you look at that whole concept of optimizing across many platforms. So I think it's just such an incredible expansion of optimization. You answered during the presentation somebody asked about what do you say to people that say SEO is dead? And we've heard it, especially in light of some changes at Google and their algorithms and how they're monitoring or indexing certain links and sites and blogs, etc. What do you say to those folks?
SEO is like an eternal butterfly, right? It's constantly evolving. So absolutely, last year's SEO is dead. And you know what? This year's SEO is going to be dead. And so on and so on and so on. So I think there is a lot of effort towards mitigating or depreciating the impact, the cause and effect kind of impact that SEO practitioners have been able to implement in the past. So in that sense, those sorts of things are being mitigated by search engines. Removing or creating multiple layers between what you do and the effect it has. So there's no way to reverse engineer it. We've always been very customer-centric about what we've done, starting as a PR firm anyway. I think if people are attaching their knowledge about SEO to a single point in time, they're doing themselves a gross disservice. And that's unfortunately what happens with a lot of folks who aren't in the business of SEO. a marketing manager, a PR person, or whatever. And so for them, yeah, SEO is dying a pretty fast death. But people who are in the business, especially long-term, they are testing, pushing to see what pushes back, always doing that, and that's where they get their information. And that kind of optimization is eternal.
Well, you know, I've been here asking all the questions, guys. Why don't you go ahead and ask the question? And I'll relay it to Lee because of the high-tech cup and string we're using here.
Yeah, I'd like to ask how has SEO changed since social media has sort of gone mainstream?
Mr. Elliott would like to know, how has SEO changed since social media has gone mainstream?
How has SEO changed since social media?
Yeah.
Well, you know, certainly Google's made a big play into incorporating Google Plus as a, you know, for lack of a better term, ranking signal, if you will. Google Plus content can show up in the search results. You can actually plus things that are in the search results. The things like author rel, I guess technically is how you say it, in order for your avatar to appear next to your search results tied to your Google Plus profile. So that, yeah, big change. You can't succeed in search without a robust social presence of some kind, especially if you're in your competitive category. So they're together. It's peanut butter and jelly, peas and carrots.
How's that?
Good.
And it's really, Lee, this is Graham across the room here, it's really a content marketing business now, is it not? I mean, that really runs through your whole book and presentation today, right?
It is a content marketing. Content is the reason search engines exist. It's the, it's really, you know, my other metaphor, I said PBJ, I think, before. I don't know. Peas and carrots. So, peas and carrots. We've got a food metaphor going. So, let's say peanut butter is the SEO and social is the jelly, and bread is content that holds it all together. I mean, really, if you think about it, it just doesn't make sense not to be content-centric. You know, content's the vehicle that makes everything happen. It's what tells the stories. It's the vehicle that transmits ideas. It's what gets shared. So, absolutely, content... And, you know, obviously he's preaching to the choir, but content is the core of any modern digital marketing strategy.
Well, I think, you know, you say you're preaching to the choir. The choir changes regularly. So not a, you know, I think that there's always something to be learned with what's happening in optimization. And that optimization, as you said, really is across all mediums. It's not just a single online. It's not just blogs. It's not just Facebook. It can lapse over into electronic media, and that's keeping that message consistent. So, Steve, did you have anything for Lee?
Well, actually, Tim's question was pretty close to what I wanted to ask, but can he go on a little bit more about content? You know, in a lot of ways, that's what everyone is talking about right now. It seems to be where the main buzz is all about, you know, content is key. That if you don't have targeted content, if you don't put titles in your hyperlinks, you know, things of that nature, none of this stuff really matters because that's what people are looking for.
So, Steve, are you saying more on the technical side of content and those?
No, just in terms of the overall content strategy. I mean, how far should companies go and organizations go in terms of trying to, you know, because we all don't want to become news sites or publishers. We want to have content that, you know, is a decision support stuff so people can make a smart buying decision. I mean, what, you know, how does he sort of structure content strategy?
Okay. Basically, Steve's looking for how do you feel or how do you go about sort of establishing a content structure when you first start working with a client? Can you sort of delve into that just a bit?
Sure. To develop a content structure, we're going to look at program objectives, any information about customers that we can collect, give us access to any data that's available. Some of the companies we work with do have robust and mature customer segmentation data sets available for us, and they know exactly who they're after, but they need help with implementation or our combined expertise. because there's a lot of search-only people, a lot of content-only people, a lot of social-only people, not so many folks doing all three for a long time. And then we're going to map that into topics and editorial calendar. And that's what then guides media creation, social promotion of that media. In our content calendar, we've got topics, where they're going to be published, where they're going to be repurposed, at what time and what format, what media will be included, what social channels will be used to promote that individual content object, what theme or narrative it belongs to, and how it's connected, and then any special metrics that we're going to pay attention to track its progress as we go.
So there you go.
Got it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lee Oden. Lee, thanks very much for spending some time in the hallway talking into my phone. And wonderful. Again, thanks very much for a great presentation. And the book is wonderful. I can't recommend it enough if you have a chance to take a look at it. Because, you know, Steve, you're right. It's all about the content and now optimizing that content. And again, it's just not about search engine optimization. So thanks very much, Lee.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks.
See you later.
So there you go.
Fabulous.
That was great. That was some awesome stuff right there, you know.
Yeah, he's, you know, it's really funny, you know, you mentioned earlier, Graham, that we were going at it back and forth, you know, and what I was, you know, hoping to help really kind of articulate is this concept we see a lot of social media, quote-unquote, gurus, continually falling back to the ethereal, real hard-to-measure analytics or hard-to-measure results of social media and discounting the hard numbers. And in a world where many businesses, many front offices are looking to say, okay, I don't want to keep spending money on this social. I need some measurable results. We need to continue to be able to not only increase level of engagement and quality of engagement, but we still need to show actual hard metrics to the front office.
Yeah, I agree, Phil, but it's becoming so much easier, I think, for even us non-analytical types to tap in with some of these tools. And I liked when he talked about tools, you know, and he mentioned Sprout Social. I don't think he mentioned Raven Tools, which is
Yeah, he did.
That's another one I'm looking at. You know, even for us non-analytic types, it's not that hard to do anymore. And, you know, even us folks that are, you know, more on the art side and not the science side of content can start doing this stuff. So that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's very important from a business standpoint is to understand that there are still those people in the front office, the ones that are holding the purse strings for your social media campaign and your marketing budget that still need to get beyond the ethereal. Well, it's about the level of engagement and the quality of that engagement, that give and take between us and the cut. That's great. How many leads did it generate? That's the sort of thing that we need to be able to get back to as well.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that right now, depending on the size of your organization, you can have people and you can have tools that are, you know, campaign management so you can track a campaign all the way through conversion and all of that. And yes, there are ways to do that. And we do it with Google Analytics ourselves, but it's really hard. It's hard to figure out how it works. It's hard to test it. It's just not a straightforward, simple sort of thing. And that's, I think, the biggest challenge. Even though I'm seeing providers like MailChimp do some cool things where you can tie in a campaign to your Twitter account and they actually then show retweets based on how many followers your retweeters have. So you can start to get a little bit of a sense of the reach of a campaign. And then if you've set up landing pages that then in turn, you can track if they clicked and went to another link and you can get a sense of conversions, that helps. But still, setting that all up is not trivial.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like this is a new issue by any means. I mean, for years and years with traditional marketing, with regular channels, we always had to deal with numbers that were suspect at best. You know, whether it was a Nielsen rating or an Arbitron rating or a subscriber number. You know, the newspaper always had that wonderful pass around number, which was just total bullshit. And then there was, you know, the Arbitron numbers depending on any given day on a broadcast of radio or TV. You know, so it. But, you know, you still have to play by those rules. You still have to, you know, within the business environment, there are things that you have to show to prove, you know, the justification for the expenditure, because it all comes down to that bottom line. That's what business is all about. So, it's the level of engagement is, of course, and the quality of that engagement and that contact, of course, is so vital. But we also need to be able to have a hard, fast number that we can refer back to as well.
Well, and the smart-ass comeback of, well, you don't look for ROI on telephones, do you? Doesn't really work with senior executives.
No, it doesn't. We played that one already.
Yeah, you can only play that card one time.
That was last year's card. You know, you got to have better answers this year.
Yeah, that's right. especially if you want headcount.
That was Gary Kohling's quote, wasn't it? We got that one from Gary.
Yeah, that quote,
along with you know, you can't show up wearing a lime green leisure suit at a party and expect to get laid. That was the
That was a great quote. Oh my God! Well, hey, we should end on the Kickstarter campaign for Smart Things.
Oh my God!
As of right at this moment, they are beyond 50% of their goal. $138,000 they've raised of their $250,000 goal. 953 backers, and they got 28 days to go. Well, you know, I mean, this bad boy is going to get funded by the end of next week, I'll bet. And you know, here's what I find really interesting. I love Kickstarter and how projects can be instantaneously embraced by the market like this. Because talk about validating their idea.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I just think it's so great. Because I actually saw a handheld Skype phone that you could carry around and set down while you were talking to people and so on. And this, they were also trying to raise $250,000. And I think after 29 days, they'd raise like, you know, $1,800. So I think the market has spoken relative to this $299 phone.
So who of the gang here is actually invested in the Smart Things?
Me.
I was all ready to do the $99 thing, and it was telling me there were like 100 left, and I clicked to do it, and it said, sorry, all gone.
Wow.
So,
yeah, I did. I try
to be able to get on the next level up. Is that, like, I don't have that much money.
It's still around.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and Steve, you're in, aren't you?
Yep, I got in.
Support?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is a space that I've been working on some stuff that I can't talk about for a client, but this is a space that I've done way too much reading about, the Internet of Things and wireless sensor networks, all this stuff, and I am really...
And I know you're a big fan of teledildonics, too.
So. Teledildonics. Thanks very much, Phil. Revealing my secrets. But seriously, it's you know, and you see these unbelievable numbers of, I'll be 19 billion devices connected to the internet by 2020, you know, things like that. I mean, there's these outrageous numbers, but it makes total sense. Especially when you see projects like this where, you know, if you've got five sensors connected to a hub, then in theory, you've got six devices there that are connected, you know, as part of that 19 billion. So it's going to be a big deal. I mean, I think we'll see stuff built in everywhere. And actually, this will be great because, Phil, you and I with our sons, we could easily have sensors on their socks. Your socks need to be changed.
Exactly where the other one
or
is.
We know where they are. Yeah, tell them to, hey, don't be dropping your dirty socks right next to the sofa in the living room.
I notice your socks are not in your drawer.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be quite that mundane. I'm pretty sure that we'll start with lamp modules and things like that, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well,
Jim, are you in by any chance? Are you doing the investment thing?
Not yet, but I think I'll probably jump in at some level.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not yet myself, but I agree with you. It's just one of those things that, you know, my first Kickstarter exposure was with the Pebble watch, so I'm still waiting for that.
What I think is the most interesting thing about Smart Things is that they're trying to build a developer ecosystem around it. That's what will be
you got it.
Real interesting to watch here.
That's exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting point, Graham, because the Pebble Watch is pretty much the same sort of thing. So I wonder if you take a look at the success of Kickstarter campaigns that include a developer community around them for the success. I mean, you wonder if that helps drive investment.
Well, and you know, Tim O'Reilly and Associates has for a long time talked about the only way to truly succeed in an internet-connected world and economy is either to be a participant in platforms or to create your own. And because, you know, the internet is the great network that everything will be connected to and already is in many ways, but that it'll really require, you know, especially if you're going to be a big deal company, that you've got to have platforms because you can't do it all yourself. You know, everybody always tries to, as you know, Tim, because you're a marketer, everybody always tries to identify markets and then prioritize those markets. Okay, so here are the top three markets that we think we can go penetrate. You figure out who the decision makers are and the requirements and yada, 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 and then you build a strategy around that. You go after those three markets. Well, there may be 15 other markets, but you look at those and go, there's not a snowball's chance in Hades. We've got the resources to do that. But if you build a platform, you know, three guys in a garage are going to go, hey, well, let's go after this Dweebazard market. You know, yeah, it's really tiny, but, and they go off and they build products for that particular market. And that's where I think the traction is really going to come from.
Well, home automation, you know, even though there hasn't been a ton of automation at the low end in a long time, really since the X10, it's still a crowded space, and in something like this, it could be knocked off very, very easily. So I think it's very smart that they're embracing the maker culture, and they don't know probably what sort of applications people will cook up for this thing.
But isn't that the excitement?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I think that is a secret sauce to this, not that they've come up with something that's going to be, you know, market leading for a long time. I think it's the community will provide the value, and that's going to be the staying power for this thing.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I'm sorry, Graham.
I was going to say where the rubber meets the road on these Kickstarter projects is, can they fulfill their promises? There was not to be negative, but there was a story, I think a Bloomberg story about how many of them are not, are causing the backers to get ticked off when they don't send their product out on time. So therein lies the challenge with these Kickstarter projects.
You got
to execute, you know.
There's that level of trust and level of gamble that you're taking by, you know, pledging your money, because you're saying, yeah, I'm going to do this for a certain amount of return on that investment, and that's usually not a big deal, but you're thinking, wow, you know, if these guys just decide to take the money and go, you don't have a lot of recourse.
No, you don't. But, you know, a lot of them aren't investing all that much money, but these people expect a lot, even when they're investing 10, 20, 30 bucks, you know. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, they can turn on you quickly.
Yeah, no question. Well, in terms of events, boys, we've got Club Entrepreneur at the Minneapolis Club. Now, that's, I think, interesting. Are they going to have to, you know, wear formal wear and say, yes, where do I sit, Muffy?
They don't require jackets there anymore.
At the Minneapolis Club? Yeah,
do,
I know.
Yeah, a lot of guys do show up with with sport coats, but I don't.
Oh yeah. Well, you got to wear your tech entrepreneur wardrobe. It includes your jeans, your dark shoes, and your dark jacket with a button down shirt. I mean, that's pretty much your uniform for your tech community.
That's right.
People even show up in jeans, and they don't kick you out anymore. So
yeah. Well, that's a lunchtime thing, right on the 6th, and then that evening on September 6th, the Minnesota Cup Final Awards reception occurs.
Yeah.
So that'll be awesome.
Yep, that should be good at the McNamara Center at the U. I think it is open to the public. You just have to go on their site and RSVP.
Yep.
And it's 5 p.m. to 7:30 or something like that.
Right.
So we were talking with one of the finalists this morning at SMB. Heroic is one of the three finalists in the high tech category, and the other ones are Docalytics. I don't know if you've looked at that yet, Steve, but that's really pretty cool. And then Precious Status is a caregiver site that's I was impressed with as well when I heard their pitch. So we'll be watching the high tech category. I will, in particular, but there are at least five other categories or something like that.
Yep. And then Saturday the 22nd, the Minnesota Bloggers Conference.
And, yeah, featuring our own Steve Borsch on the podcaster panel, right?
Yeah, I'll get my 6.5 seconds of fame. So, actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to dress up like Phil from that photo from the 80s. And
good luck with that. That's a look that just shouldn't be duplicated.
Oh, it'll be awesome. And then WordPress MSP on the 27th, but then way in October, and these are the sorts of things that you need to get registered for early, like you should for the Minnesota Blogger Conference. She's Geeky Twin Cities.
Yeah, I put that in. Looks interesting.
Yeah. It sure
is
does.
Is that only open to females?
You know, I don't know. It's $45 a day. And it's a two-day.
And men event. Are 100.
it doesn't say that.
Oh, good.
But their mission is to connect women in high technology. So it's good. It's a good event.
Yep.
It's an unconference, you know, like a.
So it's like ladies' night is what it is. So.
Right.
Well, their goal
is to
convene to inspire women for the future. And creating a space
for
women.
Great space to be in.
Yeah, in science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM. It's a great, great effort. You know, it's too bad, too, because, you know, there's not a lot of write-up about women-centric technologists. I saw that Gina Trapani, if you know who she is, the developer, and she was one of the life hacker starters, is on the Google podcast with Leo Laporte and Jeff Jarvis. She was one of the funders. Well, she is a geek, a girl geek, as she calls herself. And, you know, there's just not enough celebration, I don't think.
I agree.
Well, hopefully She's Geeky will start to change that.
Yep. Excellent.
Well, and then there are ladies like Katarina Fake, who's done some wonderful things with Flickr and now a new startup. And, I think they obviously can be held up as fine examples for the younger female set to try to emulate.
Right.
There is also an event probably I should bring up that is a sort of SMB MSP after hours, sort of a social media breakfast after hours event with an evening with Erica Napolitano.
That's right.
Redhead Writing. She's going to be here, and there's an event there about on the 13th of September at Stanley's Northeast Bar Room in Minneapolis. So her book is The Power of Unpopular.
Where is she from, Phil? Do you know?
No, I'm not 100% sure, to tell you the truth. I was looking at it last night, but I can't remember where she's based out of. But she's been doing a lot of writing and a lot of consulting on social media, and it looks very interesting.
Excellent.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's wrap up. Good talking to you guys, and glad you had Lee on. That was great. And we will see you guys next week on...
The Men of 8 Gang podcast.
Take care.
See ya.
Have a great weekend. Bye.
Have to be honest. Don't know what to say. My own way. Can't avoid my grieving. My baby's gone away. Keep thinking up excuses. How to blame it on you. How can I believe it? That ain't true. Got my heart in the open, but I can't get a clue. This should have been our time without a care. In my shame, it's a blues in the season.